Welcome. It's 2018 and the Bundesliga is back in action. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is getting into trouble once again. What should Borussia Dortmund do with their star striker now? RB Leipzig got their revenge against Schalke, but will transfer speculation consume one of their stars? And Matt Ford caught up with some Bayern Munich fans in Leverkusen, who have a lot of reasons to be optimistic. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Matt, you've got the tea in your hand, so why don't you take us through the match day?
German Federal League, Division 1, match day 18. Bayer 04, Leverkusen Football 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich 3. Sports Club Werder Bremen 1. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 1. Sports Community Frankfurt United 1. Sport Club Freiburg 1. Football Club Augsburg 1. Hamburger Sport Club 0. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896 3. The First Football Club of Mainz 05 2. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart 1. Hertha Berlin Sport Club 0. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig 3. Football Club Schalke 04 1. First Football Club of Cologne 2. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach 1. Ball Games Club 09 Dortmund 0. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football 0.
So the biggest story of the weekend actually came from the most boring game of the weekend, which was Dortmund's 0-0 draw with Wolfsburg, and it was about more who was not on the field than who was on it. Of course, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was suspended for disciplinary reasons, that disciplinary reason being that he missed a big team meeting where they were discussing the goals for the rest of the season. Jonathan, you're already shaking your head while I'm saying this, so why don't you give me your reaction to this first?
I think I read somewhere that it's now Aubameyang's been suspended the same number of times as he's been, suspended for disciplinary reasons. You know, I think that that's already a pause for concern. The biggest drain on team goals is star players not being team players. And I think in Dortmund's case, after the troubling and emotional and difficult 2017 they've just had, this is the worst possible way to start 2018. This is a group that has been torn apart in the press, you know, and had to go through managerial differences, losing Tuchel, who they won a cup with, getting a manager in that looked good, worked, and then didn't work. Obviously didn't work on an emotional level either, connection-wise. And now you've got a new manager in and you've got same problems. And my issue there is Aubameyang is the guy who scores the goals, right? He's the one that in this team, if you take out, people say, God, where are they going to get their goals from, right? You can't allow that person more rope. You can't give them more excuses or more opportunities, especially not, or even at all, if they're not going to perform like a professional. And this is just not professional behaviour. Obviously, it would have been easy for them to sell him in the summer, but they didn't get the deal that they wanted. And I can understand why they want to stand firm on that front. But can't have this, and it's a real problem.
Yep, Matt, you are basically seemed maybe fed up of the most of us, considering you wrote a good 500 words saying that it's time for Borussia Dortmund to move on. But Jonathan just highlighted one of the biggest problems is that they don't necessarily want to move on for arguably their best player unless they get the right price for them. So has the price kind of gone down now for Aubameyang to leave? Or is this something that they just have to live with until they get the price that they want?
I'm not sure what the price will be. I'm not sure how long they're going to hold on to him, whether they'll go in this transfer window or not, or what effect it'll have on the price. It's hard to tell. They've got various options, haven't they? They could let him go for a reduced price. They could just leave him to rot on the bench or in the stands for the next 6 months. Just want to pick up on what John was saying, really. I think ultimately I agree that no individual can be given more leeway or more room to play and basically take the piss with the rest of the team just because of their performances. I suppose fundamentally that is true, but I do think there is an argument to say that with particular strikers and particular p- players such as Aubameyang, I think actually, yeah, you can give them a little bit more leeway. And there's two reasons for that. One, a striker is a striker. A striker scores goals. Strikers are, by their very nature, selfish. Strikers want to be the best. They want to find the net as many times as possible. Going back down the years, you can name loads. You can name Luis Suarez, he has his problems. You can name Eric Cantona, he had his problems. Wayne Rooney had his problems. The list goes on down the years. Strikers are individual players, so there's a little bit of leeway there. As long as a player is performing, you can also forgive certain eccentricities. Aubameyang is an extremely popular player within that squad. He was popular as a person with Peter Bosz. Peter Stöger has come in and said that as a person he likes him. He's not an unpopular player within the squad. And that is also extremely important. That can't be underestimated. So in those senses, yes, I think you can give them a little bit of leeway. But as you said, there's a line. He's now been suspended for disciplinary reasons for 3 times in the space of 14 months. And it's quite simply not on. He's putting his personal interests ahead of those of the team. I'm not sure why he felt the need to leave training early on Saturday night.
Well, he said he forgot, right? Or that's what Stöger said, but then he said, we all know that that's not true.
Exactly. It's Chinese whispers what's coming out now. The fact is he left training early and missed an important team meeting, which even, from what I heard, injured players turned up to and took part in. What was so important for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to miss that, I don't know. The issue under Peter Bosz was that he invited a promotional film crew in from Red Bull to do some promotional stuff with a freestyler, and he invited this a freestyler footballer into Dortmund's inner sanctum, reserved for the players and the coach staff only, to do whatever promotional stuff he had to do. That's not on. That's you putting yourself ahead of the rest of the collective. And regardless of how good you are, regardless of the goals you score, regardless of certain personal eccentricities which you can forgive if that contributes to this creative player that you are, regardless of all that, that's a line that's been crossed. I know for a fact from within Dortmund's hardcore that there are a lot of fans who have been fed up with him well before this happened. Going back 6-7 months, I remember talking to supporters who really couldn't care less whether he stayed or goed. As far as they're concerned, he's not a Borussia Dortmund player. He's a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang player, and that's not what they want. You know, they value loyalty highly.
But what you said there about players, right, in that situation, yeah, I totally agree about strikers being selfish. But he is a popular player in the changing rooms. You can see that if you follow him on social media, absolutely. And he was definitely popular with Dembele, and he's still got that good relationship with Royce. But if you're one of those guys, doesn't that just frustrate you? Don't you go from, yeah, Oba's a good guy, I like him, to, dude, you can't do that. You know, and that's what worries me. You have got someone who's popular in the changing rooms, and by exactly that reason, if he messes up, that affects everybody because his popularity is now tainted and everyone's going, okay, well, why? You're not helping this team.
It has to be a professional relationship. And I think it's fine for players to let more eccentric players off if they upset the mark, given that they know them that well and they might respect them as people, as long as the performance is there on the pitch. But there has to be a professional line. Two interviews were quite key. Maybe it was experience which made the difference. Julian Weigl speaking after the game was asked about it, obviously. And I thought, you know, you might think quite predictably, Weigl said, oh yeah, I'm not going to comment. It's a team internal issue. I'm not going to say anything, blah, blah, blah. What you'd expect him to say. Roman Bürki, on the other hand, came out and said straight away, no, I totally support the decision to suspend him. It's not on. I think he ultimately described Aubameyang's actions as stupid. And for me, that was ideal. You can respect Aubameyang as a player, as a person. You can enjoy and appreciate his eccentricities and his creativity and the sort of person and player that he is. But ultimately, you're a professional. And just as Aubameyang wants to further his own professional interests by constantly working towards these new pay packets or transfers to bigger clubs elsewhere, equally, his teammates and his club and the supporters have a right to say, no, a line's now been crossed, and that's it. End off.
But the thing is, how does this advance forward? Because this is the first game of the second half of the season. Now, he was back in training on Monday, but it seems clear that all is not well between those two sides.
No, Stöger's got a job on his hands to get that discipline back. Because, I mean, you have to get the discipline back. And really, the only thing we need to read about Aubameyang over the next 6 months is how many goals he's scoring. That's the only thing. I think the most telling quote for me was Michel Zorc. I think afterwards he says he doesn't recognise him anymore. He doesn't think he's the same person.
I found that surprising.
That's so interesting. What's happened in the spell since they brought him? I mean, I agree with you that lots of Dortmund fans have been disillusioned with him for a while. But when he first arrived, and after that difficult season out wide, and he became that striker, and everyone's like, wow, we don't have to worry about Lewandowski anymore, this guy's good. There was certainly a connection there because he played with so much joy. You know, everybody thought, wow, look, he's smiling, he's enjoying it. Do you think it's that summer, last summer, where he was linked with all those big moves and all this hype has been made about that Real Madrid thing with his grandfather, and that never materialised, but it's always played on his mind, and he's never been able to make the move, and so he just feels like he's stuck in Dortmund, even though Dortmund, for many players, is an amazing club with a great fan base and a great opportunity. He's seeing it as a stepping stone. Do you think that his mind has changed now since he's...
I'm not even sure if he's looked particularly unhappy on the pitch, despite his two suspensions.
He's come back, but maybe internally, in his mind.
We speculate, can't we? He seems to have come back from them, and he's always performed on the pitch, which is probably why he's got away with it for so long.
Maybe there's a difference now, though. You talk about him getting away with it for so long. Maybe there's just in the past he did push the boundaries, and as you said, as a striker, you can certainly let someone do that, but eccentric, that's okay. But maybe there's a difference now that he suddenly feels like he can push the boundaries, and now he's a bit too big for his boots, or he thinks he's bigger than the club. You know, a bit random, but this never happened under Ferguson. I know it's not relevant in terms of the Bundesliga, but any player that thought he was bigger than the club, bang, see you later, right? And is it just a case that Aubameyang is now too big for Dortmund, and they don't know how to handle that?
It might be, but it's not even the case that he's got away with it twice. He's been disciplined for it twice and kicked out the squad for it twice, and now three times. I get the impression that he doesn't care, because ultimately his pattern of behaviour suggests that his priority is himself. Yeah. And as I wrote in that piece, that is fine to an extent. At the end of the day, we as supporters can expect loyalty from players, but for players, loyalty is a bit different, and he's got every right to an extent to put himself first. It's his career, it's his personal development. He's been no secret of his desire to leave one day and progress and better himself in his mind. That's his prerogative, that's absolutely fine. But as a professional, there has to then be a balance, and the way he's treated the club three times now, the fans three times, his teammates three times, for me that now has to be unacceptable regardless of his performances.
But how does this proceed now, because they're trying to qualify for the Champions League next year, and they're in a pretty big fight to get in one of those four spots?
I mean, imagine this in a different setting, in any job. If you were disciplined three times for bad performance or lack of professionalism, you'd be on probation.
You know, the question is he
on probation now?
Yeah, but what? How are you going to put a footballer on probation? Are you going to not pay him? He's just going to be even more stroppy.
The question is whether he's indispensable to Dortmund or not. And then even if he is, you have to ask, is that the point? At what point do we have principles as a footballer?
I'd sell him right now.
Right now?
I'd take a cut price just for the changing rooms.
I would too. I'm fed up with him.
I don't
support Dortmund. I'm fed up of watching him.
But let's get to the football now, because without him, sell him,
play Sancho, play Isak, take the risk, scrap the year, say we take, just take it. I mean,
in fact, this year, they might even get away with it.
They might. They finish in the top. They won't make Champions League. Maybe.
Why shouldn't they? The league's...
If they sell Aubameyang,
the league's pretty...
At the moment, 28 points is enough for, third?
Exactly. I mean, they might, but isn't it worth taking the gamble? I'd love to know what the changing rooms would be like.
Well, we got a little foretaste of it on Sunday when he started Jadon Sancho and Alexander Isak. It was bad from the results point of view, but we were discussing before that the performance wasn't good, and not going to try and disguise that or talk up that a 0-0 draw at home to Wolfsburg is in some way any sort of progress.
No, but it wasn't bad from those two, from Sancho.
They weren't particularly bad. On another day, both hit the post. Yarmolenko had a shocking off day. On another day, some of those chances would have gone in, and we'd be talking about another win under Stöger, 3 out of 3. Dortmund would still be, or they would have gone into second, I think.
Because Schalke lost.
Or they would have stayed third.
Yeah, right.
Either way. We'd have been talking about a different situation altogether. In a lot of situations, I think it'd be a massive risk to rely on two strikers such as Isak and and Sancho going forward. But in this fairly average Bundesliga season,
yeah,
I think it's a risk saying. That Dortmund can take. They're not in the Champions League, they're in the Europa League. Why not?
Nothing to lose.
They've got absolutely nothing to lose now.
And you know what? Why? You know, what do you reckon? You get 20 million for him? Because let's be honest, if you're a prospective club looking at that, you do not want to buy someone that's going to bring disciplinary issues, right?
Except PSG.
Yeah, well, they don't need another striker. So you take the gamble, right? Take it 20 million, right? If you're Dortmund, theoretically, you're going to need to get another striker potentially. Who do you reckon? Who do you reckon they could get? I mean, they could look down the Bundesliga. You could poach someone from... I mean, like, I know Marcoot's going to Schalke in the summer, but he's the perfect kind of player in that mold where you just get him and you say, you know, we take a risk, we spend 8 million on him or whatever, but he's not going to come in. You buy the right type of character who's going to come in and maybe bring a positive impact. And then, you know, in March, April, everybody's forgotten Aubameyang because Sancho's playing loads. Young players, Isak's coming along. You know, he's 12, so give him a chance to develop.
I wonder how much Dortmund's scouting department has taken a knock, though, with the departure of Sven Mislintat, though. Because obviously, he was key to replacing Lewandowski. Dortmund have always recognised their place in the food chain, so to speak.
But I'm sure they could do something, right? I mean,
but you think that, to the larger point, you think that this will be resolved by the end of January?
I think it should be resolved by the end of January, and the best way to do that would be to sell him, even if it forces them to take a cut price, because you have to start to value, as Matt just said, you have to start to value other things than your bank balance. You have to say, as a club, are we prepared to deal with this individual who continually puts himself in front of or above the club? And I think at some point you have to take a line and you have to say enough's enough.
Matt, is this going to be resolved by the end of January?
Is it? Probably not. Yeah. Should it be? Yeah.
So the showcase game of the weekend was the rematch between Schalke and Leipzig, which I think was rather interesting from the Leipzig point of view than the Schalke, although we'll get to Schalke in a second. But the fact that, of course, that Timo Werner came off the bench and scored a goal and assist a goal in just a half an hour, the fact that Naby Keita has had a whole tornado of transfer around him. And yet, still, Leipzig looked like the Leipzig team. They looked like they took advantage of the time off, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Leipzig were pretty good. I remember this game at the start of the season, and Schalke won, and everyone was thinking, hey, what's going on here, you know? It looked to me like Schalke were better prepared for this game than Schalke, Leipzig were better prepared than Schalke, which sounds a bit odd, because we've talked about how well prepared and communicative Tedesco has been all season, and they just didn't seem to fire right.
I don't think Schalke were unprepared. The reason they were able to beat them in that first game of the season back in, was it August, September, was they went into game with a specific plan. They let Red Bull have the ball rather than them dominating possession and allowing Red Bull to carry out that tactic that they're so good at, winning the ball quickly, hitting them on the break with less possession overall. That worked. I think they would have had the same plan going into this one on Saturday, but you know, Tedesco admitted after the game, he said, yeah, we had a concrete plan, we just implemented it all too rarely during the game.
Yeah.
It can happen, you can have off days, and Tedesco seems aware of that. And the way he speaks, he always comes across as extremely honest, extremely clear, extremely clinical in his evaluations. So I wouldn't worry too much about Schalke. For Red Bull,
we'll
was a return
to
form.
Because there's something interesting that I want to bring up. But
yeah.
But I wanted to also mention what you just said, which was the best way to play Leipzig is basically the thing that Leipzig does best is to basically capitalize on turnovers and get the ball up quickly and create chances that way. And in the first game, like you said, they basically let them have the ball, so they weren't really turning the ball over a lot themselves. And this time, there was times that in the second half of the game where I don't think they were connecting three passes together in midfield, and Leipzig was jumping all over it. And
yeah, but that's poor positional play. That's also poor individual errors, and that's where you.
It's
don't,
also
yeah,
to come back to the so come back to the original topic and the topic of the hour. It's also down to a return to form from Naby Keita.
Yeah,
he was good. He did those things that made him such a standout performer for Red Bull last season when they came second, and that has largely disappeared in the first half of this season. And I think we have parallels, and it's not unfair to draw parallels to the Aubameyang situation. He's known since the start of the season that he's going to be going to Liverpool at the end of the year, and by all accounts, from what you read and what you hear, he appears, in my opinion, to have to have down tools a little bit Naby Keita. His teammates haven't been impressed with his attitude. He's allegedly stopped, he's given up on his German lessons because he's moving on anyway. He's got this affair with a fake driving license hanging over him and a €415,000 fine from the Saxon driving
good work
thing, yeah. Whatever it's called,
Euro.
Landers Amped. What else has he done? And his disciplinary record has been reflected on the pitch. He's been sent off in two key games, yeah, away at Gladbach and in the cup defeat to Bayern. Yeah. So by all accounts, he seems to have let his discipline go down the drain. And he was clearly trying to force that move in January.
I do think it was important that he scored, though.
I don't know how much credit we can really give to him, considering the
he got a big deflection.
Deflection, yeah. It took off Naldo.
But not taking away from the performance. It was a return to form.
But I think you mentioned the performance. The return to form, I think, was a little bit encouraging, considering that, I mean, there was. So we were talking about rumors off air, but whether they're true or not, but there were rumors that he was going to go to Liverpool right after the game.
Yeah, but it was because Liverpool, basically, what is it, Ranić said that it was only going to happen if an exorbitant amount of money was paid, right? So that can only mean to me that they would have raised the fee to something like, I don't know, 105, 110 or whatever, because what is the deal now, 80, 90, right? So it would have to be more than 20 or 25 on top, right? Which really just, there's so many things wrong with that statement. We'd have to do a whole podcast on the reasons that you would pay 25 million for someone that you've already paid 80 million for. It just blows my mind in terms of how ridiculous that is. But from a Cater issue, I think if you combine and you look at that collectively with the Aubameyang issue, it's a broader issue in football right now. Player power is ridiculous. Since when is it possible for a player to just turn around to a club and say, "Yeah, I'm not gonna bother with training"?
Isn't it possible for any employee to suddenly decide that, "Oh, for my own personal reason, I'm just gonna stop bothering"?
We can't do that in our job. We can't. I'm not gonna come to that meeting today, even though I have to be there because everyone's there and it's important and it's part of my job and I signed a contract and it's professionalism. No, I'm just not gonna come. You can't get to a situation where we are now, and unfortunately, that's the case, where players can hold clubs to ransom. If Keita really wanted to, he could have been like, "No, I'm going to force this deal through." And from what Ranić said, they went and they said, "Look, this is what's going to happen. If they're not going to pay, they're not paying that. They're not paying what we want. You're staying until summer." And apparently his agent and he just accepted it. They probably didn't like it, but that's the way you deal with the situation. You say, "Stop, thank you very much. We've made a decision." Ironic for Leipzig, but you know.
No, I think from a pure sporting point of view, I think both Ranić at RB and Zorc at Dortmund, I think have acted in the absolutely correct way. And they've been strong, they've stuck to their guns. We can debate the irony or the morals of Red Bull holding out for more money or less money or blah, 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 whatever. That's not the point. And they've done the right thing. And I get the impression that, I only suspect, I think Keita must have been told before that game, this is done, you're going nowhere, hence the performance.
Yeah, but you mentioned the player power, but I think in this case, I think Leipzig has kind of dug themselves into their own like egotistic hole, in that they have come out from the onset and said, "We're only buying players that are under 23 years old." And basically our job, basically it seems like what they're trying to do is, from my point of view, is that they're trying to develop these players so that they can sell them on for a lot more money.
Well, absolutely.
So they can't be surprised if a player is basically wanting to go somewhere else and acting bad in training, when clearly what they're doing is they're just trying to profit off of him in the first place.
It throws up a bigger conundrum about how we treat players, or not how we per se, but how football treats players. And you get the feeling that we have to be careful that players are not treated like commodities. And if you're going to buy someone who's 21 years old for 5 million and develop them so that you can sell them for 50, and that player becomes aware that that's the only reason that you're doing it, it's a very slippery slope. Obviously, they're improving their trade, and that's something that they want to do anyway because they want to be in that. But you also have to consider the human aspect of that development. You can't just look at them as a series of numbers rating their skills, or a series of numbers that represent a value. Yeah, I don't know whether that's necessarily the case in Keita. I mean, obviously they bought him for, you know, whatever it was, 2.55 million. He went to Salzburg, then
Salzburg bought him, and then
same thing.
He ended up in the system,
and then he goes to Leipzig, plays phenomenally, and you know he's got basically the potential to be one of the best central midfielders in the world if he continues the form that he's showing, considering his age. But the deal to me, this idea of, you know, let's just throw more money at it. It really is a concern, because Liverpool probably knew that they could have thrown more money at it and then they could have forced the issue and Leipzig would be like, oh, okay, because Keita would have turned around and said, yeah, I want to go now. Yeah, and actually, as Matt said, if a club says no and that's the end of it, then it should be the end of it. You know, this shouldn't have never even been a topic in January. He's already signed. He's already moved. This shouldn't be a topic of conversation. So the fact that it even was, you know, suggests to me it's a massive problem in the industry that player power is now beyond control.
The player power is also, it's also exaggerated, as we were talking about it off air, weren't we, before, that it's not just the player power which is exaggerating the issue. It's also the noise and the chaos that surrounds it on social media and from fans all over the place.
Actually know what is happening in these transfer dealings, but
I think we've got a pretty idea of what's happened this time, not much. John described it before. There was a price in the summer, and then there was when Liverpool said, can we bring it forward because we've now got a load of cash for Coutinho, Red Bull said, okay, another 20 mil.
But the thing that Leicester came out and said, we never got an offer from Liverpool to buy him in January.
Well, by all accounts, they did. He said the other day that they did. They said that there was renewed interest, whatever that means. But either way, the fact remains that
not much has happened.
It's spiralled and developed into some huge transfer monster roller coaster thing, which hasn't actually taken place. The whole thing only exists because of the furore that's gone on around it. Yeah. It's a very bizarre, typically modern football paradox. This thing only exists because we as fans have created it, because we want it to have existed. It's very odd. It's not much has actually happened. What's happened, John described it before, and now it's over with, done. The only thing I'd pick up, Davis, I think you're right to say that Red Bull dug themselves into a little bit of a hole on this, but not necessarily for the reason that you suggested. You said that it's because they can't have it both ways. They can't have the policy of bringing through and buying young players in order to develop them, in order to sell them for profit. They're not in it for profit, at least not at that stage.
And expect loyalty.
That's also true. The reason Red Bull bringing these players either directly to Leipzig or to Leipzig via Salzburg or to Salzburg via Liefering or whatever, we can laugh, but that's what it is. The reason they do that is because they want to develop a team which expresses certain ideals which they would like Red Bull's lifestyle brand to reflect. Of course, ultimately down the line in the Red Bull Imperium, that will bring profit to Mateschitz and Red Bull. However, I think it's wrong to say that Red Bull Leipzig are bringing through players aged 23 and under in order to sell them on for a direct profit for that club. I don't think that's the case, not directly. Having said that, I can well imagine that an extra 20, 30 million euros in January would actually have come in quite handy in terms of the financial fair play regulations, because they need to start proving that they have revenue from other incomes, not just their apparently only a sponsor.
Yeah, let's go on to Schalke, because I think it's this performance was a little shocking. The fact that they kind of fell apart in the second half. But then I actually looked at their run of form, and they drew coming into that game at the end of the first half. They drew four of their last five games. Now, of course, one of them was this amazing comeback against Dortmund, which felt like a victory. But at the same time, it's still 4 points and not 12. So there's a lot. I mean, Tedesco deserves a lot of praise for the fact that he's gotten Schalke in the position that he has. But of these teams that are in this conglomerate, Leipzig, Schalke, Dortmund, and Gladbach, Are they actually more vulnerable than we actually might have thought they were?
I think they're all right. I think Matt said it earlier. I think it's just a case of, you know, Matt, they looked unprepared, but they obviously had a plan. They just didn't execute. And I thought Naldo was the perfect example of that. You know, he's been a bit of a revelation under Tedesco, because personally, when he signed them, I thought it was terrible.
He could play up front for Dortmund, couldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's just not the talent that he was back in the day. And I thought when Schalke signed him that it was a bit of a desperate move. Under Tedesco, I feel like he's improved dramatically. But against Leipzig in the first game of the second half of the season, he was dreadful. He scored that goal and everyone said, oh, wow, amazing. But after the header, he was nowhere to be seen. He kept running out of the centre of defence. He kept losing the ball. He kept making bad decisions. And so often you'd see him, you know, on the left touchline, halfway between the edge of the box and the halfway line, trying to go around a player or ping a pass. What are you doing? You know, out of position, a little slow, and Leipzig took advantage of that. And he's exactly the type of player, specifically defender, that is going to get ruined by Leipzig because of the way that they play. And he just got exploited and the rest of the team fell apart around that. Stambouli wasn't that good either. So that's the concern. And the system works well with Tedesco if you can execute the plan. But if you don't, then individual players can get exploited.
Was this a one-off performance from Schalke, Matt?
One-off in terms of the plan not being implemented 100%, because Tedesco insists upon that. He's very immaculate in his planning, meticulous, probably a better word. Schalke, yeah, lots of praise in the first half of the season, not totally undeserved. But we said before that there's that many teams up there on around 27, 20, 28 points that it probably wasn't too hard to actually come second,
yeah,
at the halfway point. But Tedesco's only been there for one half of a season. I don't think there's anything to worry about. They're on the right track, and it did well to get back into the game, exploiting this bizarre weakness that Red Bull seemed to have from set pieces, which for a team who planned just as meticulously under Ranjikin, Hasenhüttl as any Tedesco team, it's quite surprising. They keep getting undone by set pieces. It was another free header for Naldo, and that needs sorting out.
So Matt Ford was in Leverkusen this week and spoke to some Bayern Munich fans about their team's success. He also caught up with German football journalist Archie Reintut. Here were his conversations.
Hello and happy new year. We're back on the road in 2018 because the Bundesliga is back. It's match day 18 and we've just got on a train in Cologne to make the short trip up the Rhine to the Bayer Arena, Leverkusen, where the reigning German champions, Bayern Munich, five times in a row, German champions Bayern Munich, are the visitors. Two Bayern Munich fans here on the train. We've got Claudia and we've got Kevin. Kevin, it was, I think, the first half of the season was, as I say, a half of two halves, really, under Carlo Ancelotti and then the arrival of your Heinkes. Did you think that was a good idea at the time?
Yes, I think it was a good idea because Kennt die Mannschaft.
He knows the team.
Yes. He knows he knows the team better than any other trainer. So I think so or manager. So I think that's the best choice for us.
I think the results have certainly reflected that. Still unbeaten in the league, and of course Bayern Munich have progressed in the cup as well. 11 points clear now as we start the second half of the season, the Rückrunde. What's your expectations for the second half of the season?
A good football, many points. So, and I hope that we see for next year is a good result for us and a good football.
Claudia, do you think it's already decided? Do you think the Bundesliga is already finished? Are Bayern going to win the league again?
Yes.
Do you think there is absolutely?
Of course.
Why? Is it too easy?
Bayern is the best.
It's better than any other.
Do you think that the Bundesliga is sometimes too easy for Bayern Munich?
Oh, that's a bad question, I think. No, the problem is that another team has not this result. So Bayern, Bayern has not a problem. Bayern has only this results, and there's the problem from the other teams, I think.
There was one big piece of transfer news during the winter break. Bayern have signed Sandro Wagner.
Yes.
Or for the end of the season.
Yes.
What do you think of that? Do you think he has a chance to play with Lewandowski there? Or what do you think of that?
Our trainer have said that perhaps I think that they can with these two can play together. Or yes, but is Lewandowski fit? I think Sandro has no chance. So sorry, but.
So I think one of the jokes in the press in the week was that Sandro Wagner is wearing number 2 on his shirt.
Yes.
And people were saying, yeah,
good
that's
number.
The,
yes, good number.
Number 2 is the number of games he will play this season.
Okay.
The other big question around Bayern Munich is the question about the manager, the coach, Jupp Heynckes. Obviously, we said he came back and that turned out to be quite a good decision in 2017. Do you think he will stay at the end of the season? And if not, who do you think is the best replacement?
I hope that he will stay, but I think he's in his age to say, okay, I cannot. So I think when it's a new trainer, I think it's Thomas Tuchel.
Thomas Tuchel left obviously Borussia Dortmund, and he had quite a few personal problems. I think he had disagreements with with the club.
Dortmund, so yeah. They have many problems of that.
That's the opinion of a Bayern Munich fan on Borussia Dortmund. We were just talking on the platform before. We were talking about what it's like going to Bayern Munich games here in Germany. You and Claudia come from a town near Cologne. You go to home games sometimes, but you said you prefer to go to the away games. Why is that? Atmosphere.
Okay. The atmosphere, I think it's in home not so good because you have many event fans. So if you're not home, then I think the atmosphere is very, very better. We're more louder, more traditional, and yes, I think it would be more fun. Not home.
There was a Bayern fan on the platform just before, and he said that he's paid 92 euros for a ticket for the Champions League game against Besiktas. Is that normal?
The price is normal, but I think it's too much. It's definitely too much for this game and for Champions League. So I think this cards will be not more than 6 euro.
What is the atmosphere like in the away end when Bayern Munich travel to places like Leverkusen? What's the atmosphere like? Can you describe what the day is like?
Better. So I don't know how I can more explain that. It's better. It's louder. Yes.
Leverkusen have had a good season themselves as well, so it won't be an easy game for Bayern Munich tonight. And you said before that Bayern have actually got quite a bad record over the past few years. What's your prediction for the game? How do you think it's going to go?
I think we win, but not like 2-1. You know, not more, because Leverkusen is a good team, has good results at the end of this first season, and I think it's not easy for us.
Not easy, but a win. Claudia, what do you think the score will be? 1-0? 2-0?
2-1.
2-1 to Leverkusen?
No.
Oh, 2-1 to Bayern. Okay, right. Claudia, Kevin, thank you for your time and enjoy the game.
Thank you.
We're inside the Bayer Arena. It's just under half an hour to kick off now. The team's warming up outside on the pitch, and I'm with Archie here, just about to go into our seats. Archie, football journalist over here. Archie, you watched lots of Bayern Munich and Leverkusen in the first half of the season. What were your impressions, mainly of Bayern?
Of Bayern, it was a team that really improved as the season went on. I didn't expect for us to be standing here and saying or hearing that Uli Hoeneß after the first half of the season was describing Sven Ulreich, the reserve goalkeeper, as their player of the season so far. But I think that perhaps the 11-point lead doesn't quite show how good they've been, because I don't think they've been 11 points better than the rest of the division necessarily. But nevertheless, I think building perhaps to a crescendo come the end of the season in good shape.
Exactly. 11 points clear at the halfway stage would seem, in any normal year, business as usual for Bayern. But it's not been that straightforward, has it? I say a half of two halves, really, under Ancelotti and then later under Heinkes. What sort of changes has Heinkes made to the team that you've noticed?
I think what you've seen is, for me, Arturo Vidal suddenly coming back into form. He looked just completely uncontrollable, and I think the fact that Heinkes has been able to get a hand around him and going, look, this is what you need to do again, and actually, I mean, you still can't really ever control Arturo Vidal. He is
part of his game.
He is an untamable bulldog in the centre of midfield. But I think that his improvement has been something. Javi Martinez as well, being reinstalled into that defensive midfield role, has been something that has really added to Bayern and given shades of 2013.
Although often at the expense of Sebastian Rudi.
Yes, who I think is still a good player and a good option to have. He's on the bench tonight. But I don't think necessarily they're losing all that much without Sebastian Rudi. He's still, it's the sort of thing that you need as Bayern Munich, to have that sort of quality player who you can bring in. But also Sven Ulreich. I know we've just talked about him, but I remember I was asked by somebody, who's a better goalkeeper, Roman Bürki and Sven Ulreich, and I had to say Roman Bürki, but right now it has to be Ulreich. He was winning games for Bayern come the end of the first half of the season.
And even some of those little excursions outside of his box, it looked like he'd definitely taken a leaf out of Manuel Neuer's book. And we've listed quite a lot of improvements there that Jupp Heynckes has made, and of course, if you ask Uli Hoeneß, he wants his friends to continue at the end of the season. Heynckes doesn't, he wants to go back to his dog. Just round the corner from Leverkusen in Mönchengladbach. Talking to a Bayern fan on the train before, Kevin, he thinks that Thomas Tuchel would be an ideal successor. Where do you stand on the Bayern Munich succession managerial issue?
If you ask Bastian Schweinsteiger, he'd agree with you that Thomas Tuchel would be a good successor. For me, I'm not entirely convinced with Tuchel that I think perhaps for a season or two, a long-term solution. I guess with Bayern Munich, do you ever find long-term solutions as a club? It's a little bit trickier. But I, to be honest, I can see why they're begging Jupp Heynckes right now. I think that for what they want, which is a German-speaking coach, he is proving himself to be the best option at present, and somebody as well who will hold this current group of players together. And with Thomas Tuchel, for example, we know that there was friction with Mats Hummels, for example, and that the impression he left at Borussia Dortmund was more, he left the dressing room ablaze with people against him. So I think that puts question marks over him. Whether Julian Nagelsmann is quite ready, I'm not too sure. I'm still sitting on the fence here, as I think you can tell, but I think that actually...
Obviously, actually, New Year's resolution wasn't more commitments. You stayed well and truly on the fence. Going back to this evening's game, Leverkusen away is, given Leverkusen's form in the first half of the season, not an easy task for Bayern, is it?
No. 14 games unbeaten in all competitions, but as well, just seeing the growth of this team. I think it's easier when you start from a low base, which is what Heiko Herrlich had, and he hit that low base when he tumbled away at Borussia Mönchengladbach as well, with that spectacular dive, if anyone's somehow not seen it on the interweb.
I actually missed that. I only saw it about 10 days later. It's incredible. Giving Louis van Gaal a run for his money.
No, well, Louis van Gaal and to German aficionados Norbert Meyer as well. That's a good YouTube clip. But the way that Leverkusen have become defensively stable again, they can defend set pieces. That was their Achilles heel in the reverse fixture. I was going to say Rückspiel, but that's not going to help anyone.
No, it's very much the case. So that's the team that, the problems that Roger Schmidt left behind wasn't even before Typhoon Korkut took over. Leverkusen have never had problems scoring goals, and they've got a formidable attack now, boosted as well by the return form of Leon Bailey, and Lucas Alario has been impressive as well. So goals up front, but yeah, have they got enough to keep Bayern out?
That's the question for me. To be honest, I think without Robert Lewandowski, yeah, I could see them sneaking this. I could see a 2-1 I'll say 2-1. I'll get off that fence.
But... off the fence going for a 2-1. I'm going to go for a slightly more positive Bayern result in 3-1. But anyway, yeah, let's head in now, see how it goes, and let's see how the second half of the Bundesliga season goes. It's full time here at the Bayer Arena. Bayer Leverkusen 1, Bayern Munich 3, the German champions getting 2018 off to a winning start thanks to goals from Javi Martinez, Frank Ribery, and a fantastic free kick in injury time from James Rodriguez. Archie, we're just leaving the ground now. Thoughts on Bayern? Is that the start of a title procession?
It started in October, didn't it, really?
we had some excitement left in the league, didn't we?
We did, and then Borussia Dortmund fell apart. It's difficult to see anything other than a title procession. I guess the disappointing thing from the perspective of the league being a competitive spectacle, although speaking from that point of view perhaps seems a little bit silly given the dominance that Bayern Munich have had over the last few years. You wouldn't say that Bayern Munich are particularly good in comparison to the Pep Guardiola side. And even tonight, I wouldn't say that they had to play particularly well. I think it says a lot about the quality of that is there in the rest of the league, and we've seen it in Europe. And sometimes I don't think it necessarily is reflective that the results in Europe of what the quality that actually lies in the league. But actually, I think that this season it is very much on point.
I think one of the things that made Guardiola's Bayern team stand out was the way they're able to kill off games so often. And we saw again tonight, until that injury time free kick, Bayern once again didn't quite manage to kill off the game. They didn't have that many clear-cut chances. And perhaps had Bayer Leverkusen been able to finish slightly more clinically up front, they did hit the bar through Leon Bailey, who was impressive again, but with a bit... perhaps just a little bit more ruthlessness up front, then it would have caused Bayern more problems.
Sven Ulreich didn't have to make a save. That tells you all you need to know about how indecisive that Leverkusen were on the break. But I mean, a few times it was rough breaks as well. The fact that Leon Bailey gets his feet caught under the ball, that happened. A shot was deflected wide. I do afford a little bit of sympathy towards that, but it was only actually when Leverkusen went a goal down that they did start to be that tick more decisive. But I think it's just a little bit disappointing that Leverkusen perhaps didn't play Bayern before the winter break, because I think the sort of momentum they had, the wind was taken out of their sails somewhat tonight. But I think we're about to get run over here.
We are about to get run over, but it's okay. No worries. We have survived.
For now, by the police. By the police.
And now that's probably a decent time to end it before the police run us off the road into the canal, which runs behind the away end here at the Bayer Arena. I don't want to know how many bodies are in there, but we'll leave that for another time. 2018, the Bundesliga is up and running, and it's started very much the way 2017 finished, with a Bayern Munich victory. Talk to you soon.
That was Matt Ford in Leverkusen. That'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Fort at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_VanOftor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Niklas Füllkrug had a perfect hat trick for Hanover in their 3-2 win over Mainz. That was the first hat trick of any kind by a Hanover player in the Bundesliga since October 2011, when Mohamed Abdellaoui scored one against Werder Bremen. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.